Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen. This show is a compilation from many reporters, so it's like having many co-hosts. We'll start with Pat Schlarbaum, taking us to Swan Lake State Park in Carroll County. Then Joy B. will share what she learned from last Saturday's Women's March in Des Moines. And we'll close our show with previews of events coming up this weekend in Webster City and right here in Ames with the Theologian in Residence, who will be at UCC, that's United Church of Christ, this weekend. It's a busy day. So let's get started with Pat giving us an update on snowy owls.
Welcome to Local Talk, Carroll County Conservation Board. Naturalists, what's in Matt's world today?
Right now, I'm at Swan Lake State Park. We're out looking for long-eared owls at the moment. And we usually have them here amongst our cedar stands. It's a good place to find them. So far, we haven't seen anything, but that's okay. Lots of great ducks out on the lake right now and good diversity of waterfowl overall.
And there's a lot of excitement about the snowy owls that have brought the wildness of the north from from the land of Arctic wolves and polar bears. We get snowy owls, not every year, but quite often. What about the snowy owl numbers for this year?
So the average winter here, you know, we might get 10, maybe usually less than 10 sightings across the entire state, the entire winter. And kind of generally using winter terms as, you know, loosely late October through early March, that's the entire time we expect to see them. But this year already, from late October, we've had at least 50 birds in the state, we think, maybe upwards of 70 even. And we're getting reports daily. We're seeing reports, whether it's new birds being found or people going out to see birds that they know have been seen in the place. So it's generating a lot of excitement. Snowy owls are definitely, you know, entrancing. We all love seeing them, and so it's a pretty big deal here. It's been about about 6 years since we had the last really significant event like this here in Iowa itself.
And they are being seen locally here in Story County.
Correct. Yeah, just west of Ames, there's been a couple being seen. Commonly, they are seen sitting along the roadside on Highway 30 and near the Stop Eminent Domain semi-trailer sign on the north side of Highway 30 there, right along that area as well. There's been one being seen there as well. So, yeah, really.
What brings them to central Iowa in December?
Well, yeah, so we think this year, we think what's going on is this is probably one of the boom years for their food, for their prey items up north. And sometimes people think, oh, they're starving and they need to come south in search of food. But it's kind of was the opposite of that that got them so far, so many of them here. So the lemmings, bog or Arctic lemmings, we think maybe way north, they boom about every 4 or 5 years.
And that's their prey item?
Their prey item, yep. And that sort of signals to the females that triggers her to lay more eggs. And one of the mating rituals is the male bringing food. And so that cues her in that her body will then lay more eggs. The average year, you know, it's 3 to 5, maybe 6, 7 eggs. If it's a low year, it'll only be a 1 or 2 and maybe even none if there's not enough food to feed babies. These big years, they'll be upwards of a dozen even, 13 eggs in a nest. So getting to answer your question is, with all these new owls being born and successfully fledged with all that food to feed them, there's not ample winter hunting grounds. And so then these younger owls tend to push south in search of winter hunting grounds and food that they're not being allowed to hunt up north. There's not nearly as much food quite this time of year like there was when they were being raised. And we know this because most of the birds we're seeing are very heavily marked, and that tells us they're young birds. There's a few that we're seeing that are probably more in their second, third, fourth, in older years, but the majority of them are younger birds.
Yeah, please describe the size and coloration on these birds.
So this is our heaviest owl in North America. but it's the third tallest behind great horned owl and great gray owl. So when they're young, they have a lot of barring on them, a lot of dark markings, and the females are even more heavily barred. And that's due to her sitting on the nest and trying to have the nest be more camouflaged. There's some really obvious young females that are really dark and very heavily marked, but a lot of them, when they're younger, are really hard to tell the gender apart. So as the male age, they lose their markings, and the older they get, the whiter they will get. And so they'll be the almost stark white that we see, you know, in Harry Potter movies, Hedwig, yeah. And which coincidentally, I believe, is a female owl in the movie. However, we know now that they use a male, the yeah. stark white, beautiful male snowy owl as Harry Potter's male owl.
So these younger ones are going to be a bit more a gray in appearance, but essentially
yes.
a lot more black barring. I've read where in their migration or in their movements to Iowa, rather than go 100-mile increments, they fly upwards of 600 miles.
That's incredible.
A couple flights, and next thing you know, they're in Iowa. That they know not to just go a ways. They go a long ways.
That is amazing. And when, if you go look at the map and see how far away the Arctic Circle is from from yeah. Iowa, you know, well over 1,000 miles away, 1,500 miles, depending on where they're born, whatever. But it is an impressive distance they've covered. And banding research is showing that they're doing pretty well when they show up here. They're doing well. But, you know, one of the concerns is once they arrive to Iowa, what kind of host we are being as far as ample food producer and supplier. And you know that a lot of our open agricultural areas do kind of resemble the tundra. Open, no trees, a little bit of slight rolling hills here and there, mostly flat. It does present a challenge with finding enough small rodents. They are very adaptable. I mean, they are known to eat ducks. I saw one with a rabbit the other day. So they go after a variety of things. But out in the Chisholm field, there's not a lot of that stuff. A lot of our other resident raptors figure out that hunting along the roadside is a place to find food. We've got vegetation there, and there's perches, and people are kind of messy, so we throw garbage and food out of windows, and that attracts rodents. So that's a place that they end up finding themselves hunting, and we're seeing that they don't always win the navigation battle with vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
So we know of about at least probably 25 birds that have died so far in this last couple of months. And, you know, so that's a pretty high percentage. And those are just the ones we know about. So, you know, this kind of underscores this need for habitat protection, habitat production,
yeah.
You know, thinking of CRP and prairie areas. Those are great areas that snowies would find themselves hunting, and several of our others.
So they are quite often perched on fence posts or directional markers along the highway. People stop. Let's get into some of the ethics of how to enjoy these birds respectfully
sure.
and ethically.
Yeah, so you touched on where to see them, and along the roadside is definitely one. Quickly just mention that you'll see them sitting straight up on the ground, too. They sit on the ground a lot. They sit on rock piles. They sit on buildings. They sit on signs. They sit on fence posts. Rarely do they sit in trees. They don't know what trees are coming from the Arctic. It's really important that we are being respectful of their space. And as far as raptors go, they are relatively tolerant of people. However, that doesn't mean it's okay to just keep getting closer and closer and closer. It's a good idea to have some binoculars, or if you don't have a spotting scope, find the front of the scope and stay a fairly safe distance away. And I know that's kind of hard to quantify exactly what that means, but use good judgment. Be extra safe, staying further back than maybe even think you need to. Another really good tip is to stay in your vehicle. And with most wildlife, you'll notice that they're not as scared of cars as you might think they should be. But once you exit your vehicle and they see that upright two-legged figure, they recognize that as predatory problem, and they're going to flush, they're going to run off. And so if you are a photographer, using your car as a mobile blind is a great tip. So not approaching these guys is really important. Like I said, food isn't necessarily just abundant here. So their next meal, who knows exactly, but if they have to burn excess calories because you wanted to get a picture, and that's something we certainly frown upon. And most folks, they don't want that to happen. They just don't quite get it. They don't quite understand. And so it's something that we're definitely working on, talking with folks and trying to raise awareness about being a respectful wildlife watcher. And I know it was talked a lot about when eagle watching became very popular, the eagles came back, and, you know, being essentially, you want to think about not altering the animal's day any differently than if you weren't there. You know, so what is trying to figure out what that means. And a good wildlife watcher or photographer is going to take an extra step or two to learn about their subject and learn what triggers them to want to feed or what triggers their response as far as needing to flee, things like that. And that's something that's, you know, that's just bottom line is education. So yeah. That's a little bit what we're trying to do here today, obviously, and encouraging folks to want to go learn more.
Exactly. They're quite a wonderful resource from the wilds of the Arctic that are here for a few more months in Iowa. I hope everybody gets an opportunity to see them. A good photographer friend that has recently passed away, Roger Hill, would always look for the chisel-plowed field with patchy whiteness. There was black and white, and that's where a good photographer friend would recommend slowing down the vehicle and keeping an eye out.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'll also add, if folks do see a snowy owl, if you log on to iowabirds.org, that's the Iowa Ornithologist Union page, you'll see there's a map that I'm keeping there of reports of these birds, and there's contact information on there that folks can reach me to let me know about their sightings. And we're trying, it just kind of gives us a nice snapshot of how they're dispersed all over the state. And you'll see there's some that demarc ones that are from November, some December, some that are been picked up in rehabbers and they're hurt, or some that we know have mm-hmm. are no longer with us. Just last night reached over 10,000 views on that map. And it just gives you an idea about what kind of buzz there is about these amazing creatures.
Yeah, and Roger Hill, the photographer friend, mm-hmm. would definitely be enjoying this eruption.
That's yeah, eruption.
I-R?
Yeah, it's his own word, right, yeah.
I-R-R-U-P-T-I-O-N. Yep. It's an eruption year. Great to share this excitement. Anything else, Matt?
I find, too, when these events happen or whenever I see one of these, it's just I feel differently about them than I do seeing many other things. And I'm a big bird watcher and photographer and love
yes,
all
you
sorts
are.
Of great stuff. But I have some special connection to the north, apparently, because these birds are they move me in a different way, and so it's always happy to share that excitement with folks. We want to make sure that we're good hosts here by being respectful watchers, and then let's try and add some more habitat for the next time they visit.
I hope you get to see snowy owls for many days to come. Have a good day in the field, young man.
You bet. We'll talk to you later. Thanks. You too, Pat.
Okay.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm your host for today, Susan Franson. You've been listening to Pat Schlarbaum talking with Matt Wetrich, Carroll County Conservation Naturalist, telling us about the snowy owls and other birds that they have up there on Swan Lake. With our roller coaster temperatures here in Story County, they have been spotted once again on fence posts and other easily viewed spots in our neighborhood. The pleasant sunny weather last Saturday, January 21st, brought a lot of people to Des Moines for the Hear Our Vote rally, the 2018 Women's March. KHOI reporters Joy B., Cynthia McClure, Pat Schlarbaum, and Ursula Rudenberg were present. Joy was the main interviewer, so here's her report.
The people at this year's 2018 Women's March in the Des Moines crowd brought several generations of grandmothers, moms, and granddaughters, and many more boys and men stood in support of the women in their lives this year. Even the family dog was present. This year, over 2,000 women decided to stand up and run for offices themselves across the nation. Many participants expressed hope for the future in gathering together to resist and speak up for issues that are important to them, like civil rights, workers' rights, ending violence, reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights, disability rights, immigrant rights, and environmental justice. I met many women who have joined together in communities all over the state in getting people registered, informing people of their constitutional rights. Women are taking actions in uniting and forming groups to resist and inform people of their rights and issues that are worth enrolling the entire family in standing for. People marched in over 300 cities across the United States, and the global march reached many countries like Italy, Uganda, Germany, Japan, China, and even small islands like Fiji. People at the Women's March were focused on what they were standing up for, what they are most passionate about, and what they are taking action on. Okay, we're at the Women's March, the beginning, and I'm going to ask, what brought you back this year? You were here last year.
Well, I really think it's important to keep the spirit of activism going throughout the year. It's one thing to show up at a march, you know, reconnect with everybody. We have midterms coming up, so today's theme is about voting and making sure that people get out to vote, because we clearly didn't get enough last time around. So that's why I'm back. It's just really important to keep connecting with people throughout the year. I work on campaigns, and I can't say enough about the continued activism. We can't get so upset by what's going on that we drop off and just say that nothing can be done.
What do you hope for the future that comes out of this march?
Well, I see a lot of women stepping up, whether it is to run for office or to take on new leadership roles. And I hope to see that continue, because we are far outrepresented in the legislature and even on county boards of supervisors. You know, it's really important that we keep picking up more women to run for office, take leadership roles, and that we be involved in supporting our fellow women in doing that. And I think that this is great. You know, we have quite a crowd out here, and hopefully they can connect today and find people in their areas to help support in running for office. It's a beautiful day out, and, you know, we couldn't ask for anything better. No, I hope everybody has a good time today.
Tell me what your sign says.
My sign says, girls just want fundamental rights. Thank you.
Sisterhood of Iowa is a group that started in Cedar Rapids. It's a group of ladies who met right after the inauguration, and we were just so full of angst. We didn't know where to turn. I mean, we were thinking about our democracy, the loss of our democracy, our grandchildren's, and we started to meet. And as we were meeting, we said, we've got to extend this out. There's so many of us out there that may not be able to be part of a big group, but a little group that they can do offshoots on. And what we focus on is a couple of social-based issues. For myself, it's voter rights and getting people registered. For my partner, Jean White, passing out constitutions. Constitutions so that everybody knows you're armed with information. Information on our Facebook presence, Sisterhood of Iowa. If you look at our business card, it says information, education, and mobilization.
Okay, and then you mentioned your granddaughters and your daughters. What would you like to tell them?
I have a 10-year-old granddaughter. I have a 13-year-old grandson. My granddaughter will say to me, Grandma, why are you doing this? And I tell her it's for her future. She's a little resistor champion herself. She reads, she speaks out, she asks questions. And I just said, you need to have the correct information. And just whatever it is you do in life, I said, just protect your democracy.
I've got 16 grandkids and then 3 great-grandkids. And they've got to stand up for themselves. Otherwise, what we're going to see is what happened in the 30s with fascist Germany, because you're seeing the isolation, the blaming of different groups, of immigration groups. And if we don't stop this now, it's going to be worse. Everybody will be enemies. And you know what? That's not what I grew up with. Everyone should know the Constitution.
The Women's March last year ignited this fire inside of both of you that are here today. So what do you hope for this coming year?
I hope we have CHIP. I hope we have DACA. Please, Mr. Mueller, find out all of the criminal activity that's going on with the parties, with Russia, with Putin, you know, with the regime that's in power right now. Find out everything and let's get them tried. And let's get our country back, our democracy back. That's okay. So important.
We have a group of women here that came together, it looks like. And can you say what your sign says?
Yeah, it says, what you allow is what will continue.
Okay. And what does your sign say?
My sign says, the most powerful force is a woman determined to rise. Just, I've experienced a lot of this myself, and having the courage to want something to change and the willingness to make it happen is something very powerful, and I think every woman has that courage and should have that courage.
And how old are you?
22.
And what does your sign say?
My sign says, our minds, our bodies, our votes, our power.
Okay, so what brought you out today to the Women's March? And did you come last year?
I did not come last year because I was working, but my parents were in D.C., and my mom made hats for me and all my friends this year, and I definitely want to be more politically engaged. I can say me too. Like, it's happened to me, so it's so sad that it's happened to so many other people, but it's nice that people are speaking out now.
I think it's just very powerful that so many women are now feeling the courage to come out about this, because I know for me personally, it's very encouraging to see so many people share their experiences.
Well, I think it's really great that all these people come together to see what's right and what's not, and that people come together to help one another.
I came here with some friends last year, and this year we've decided it was a family event this time. Bring on the blue tsunami. We've had enough of this.
I'm here because I support the women. I think it's wonderful. I'm happy to be here. And because I'm absolutely opposed to what the Republicans are doing.
And is there any particular issue that's really ignited you to stand here today?
There are so many, but since this is a woman's march, reproductive rights are at the top of the list. Also, the racism is just intolerable.
I'm sick and tired. It's got to change.
What has to change?
Everything.
And I see you have a sign that says, love it, improve it, Medicare for all. Is that a really important issue for you?
That and public education and our environment. We need somebody who listens to our citizens. I do not want to end up like Flint, Michigan. I didn't want the pipelines in. All to corporate greed for private gain. Where are we going to go? What are we going to eat? What are we going to drink?
Akeo Abdul-Saman, a state representative of the House, District 35. I represent the American Muslim Alliance and also attend the mosque, and also am honored to have our representative from our city here.
And do you want to say anything to the community of Muslims also that you represent?
You know, one of the things is that we have to understand that as Muslims, if we don't start telling our own story and we allow people to tell our story, then we will allow as a society to always have a boogeyman to fear. And we have to start telling our story to be able to get the word out to address Islamophobia. We have to get the word out to be able to address the stories that are told against us, because we have a religion that fits in with all the other religions, from Judaism to Christianity. And of course, there's ills in all the religion. But if we look at our differences, then our similarities have substance.
What would you like to tell the young people of the next generations about being at a women's march and being involved in things like this?
I always believe, and I think when I open up my talks, I think to people of the shoulders that I stand on. I stand on individuals like was said today, Shirley Chisholm. I stand on Harriet Tubman. I stand on Rosa Parks. I stand on Martin Luther King and Malcolm. Those are the shoulders I stand on. Now to my young people, you now are standing on our shoulders, of the shoulders that we stood on. So you have generations of shoulders. Now you have to prepare your shoulders for the next generations to stand on. And the only way that that can happen is that we love and respect one another and that we learn to work together. And we support and pass the baton to you and create a path for you to be able now to bring systemic change so your great-grandchildren will not have to be at a woman's rally, will not have to be at a civil and human rights rally, but will be able to change the world and make it better for the generations to come.
Anyone can ever have, but it's all worthless treasure. True worth is only measured not by what you got, but what you got in your heart. But you can have, everything. But what does it,
this is KHOI Community Radio's Local Talk, where we feature the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, and we've been listening to Joy B's report on the 2018 Women's March in Des Moines. And you just heard Stand Up for Something by Andrea Day, sung by the Cardinal Sheehan School Choir. Returning to the Women's March, Christine Nobles, a Native woman, spoke at the rally on behalf of the organizations Ceding Sovereignty and Indigenous Iowa. Christine related startling statistics about the rate of rape, abuse, murder, and disappearance of Native women.
This march is about many things, but primarily it is about empowering women. The reality is that the Native American and Alaska Native women endure the highest rates of rape and assault in this country. Older statistics told us that one in three Native American women will be raped or experience sexual assault in her lifetime. But recently that statistic has moved to one in two. A new Department of Justice study shows that of over 2,000 women surveyed, 84% of Native American and Alaskan Native women have experienced violence. 56% have experienced sexual violence. Over 60% have experienced psychological aggression or coercive control. Over 80% have been stalked. And 90% have experienced violence at the hands of non-tribal members. These are numbers, and they might be flowing past you right now in this setting, but these numbers are astonishing. And this is not something talked about in mainstream society. Experts say that these astonishing statistics still underestimate the number of women affected by violence because the infrastructure for women to report and handle incidents is underfunded. Also, there is a lack of local law enforcement on reservations, and if you can believe this, our tribal courts do not have the jurisdiction to prosecute non-tribal members for many of the crimes like sexual assault and rape that occur on our lands. This why? And our men are suffering, by the way, from these same afflictions. They have the same high rates as well. But this leads me to the next point. Missing and murdered Indigenous women. On some reservations in the United States, Native women are murdered at more than 10 times the national average. In Canada, it's 6 times the national average, and there are currently over 1,000 missing Indigenous women there. It's no different here either, where the rate of missing women is astounding, but has barely made a dent in mainstream news sources. These women are either dead, ran away from horrible situations, or have been sold into the sex trade that exploits our vulnerable population. Here in Iowa, the Meskwaki have taken the initiative to protect their people and have started a program for missing and murdered Indigenous women that is led by my good friend Dawson Davenport, and Indigenous Iowa Collective member. He recently created the Rita Papakee Foundation in dedication to the missing Meskwaki woman. It provides resources for families and educates the public about this serious, serious issue. With all of this being said, I have to ask, do you think Donald Trump and his misogynistic white supremacist administration is going to help or hinder us in this fight to overcome this awful reality? I don't think so. This administration has already announced that they will make cuts to the Department of Justice. This means that the Violence Against Women Act is in jeopardy. This act has specific programs under it that are targeted towards Indigenous women because of our crisis status. This is something to keep in mind as we move forward in 2018.
We'll close our story about the Des Moines Women's March with the voice of another Native woman.
I am an Ojibwe Indian. I was born on the White Earth Indian Reservation back in 1937.
That's northern Minnesota?
Yes, the northern Minnesota. No, White Earth.
White Earth.
And I lived there until I was 30 years old. And then I came to Iowa because of my husband's job. And then I taught school for over 30 years in Newton, Iowa. And then when I retired, you can see I'm 80, I retired a few years ago, and then I volunteered at the Mitchellville Prison for Women, only working with Native American inmates. And I stayed there for 10 years. And I asked to sit in a circle, and I was there with them. It was amazing how many Native Americans there are in Mitchellville. When you consider that we do not even have a reservation, we have a settlement, the Meskwaki settlement, but not a reservation. Many of my inmates came from the Sioux City area, some from across Nebraska. I actually had a couple from Minnesota that got in trouble in Iowa. One of them was from my reservation, and I said to her, what in the world are you doing here?
So what's important to you about being here today for maybe the future generations of Native Americans and yourself?
I am very concerned about how we're taking care of the earth. I'm concerned about the short-sightedness of white people and not honoring the earth and what we have to give back. And I wish they could listen to my ancestors, because the earth was Mother Earth and very important. So I'm also very concerned about equality for everyone, because I have felt firsthand discrimination, and it's painful. And I would hope that we could someday have a country that was really united, and that this divisiveness that's going on right now with this administration is driving me crazy. And so I have to be at places like this. I have to be talking to people. I have to stay alive and active and try to make a change.
listening to what's coming up this weekend, I'd like to bring Carol Barrick in to talk to us about the winter weekend coming up at Briggs Woods near Webster City. Carol speaks as an enthusiastic return visitor.
I am writing 70 Years, 70 Stories, which is patterned after George Burns' 100 Years, 100 Stories. And I love to write. And this workshop was advertised with the Ames Community Arts Association. And I think it was happening in 2 days. And I was so excited to read about this workshop that I signed up right away. And I took this class with six or seven other people, and Jennifer Burt was our leader. We did neat writing exercises in this big cabin in Briggs Woods Park. We were surrounded by woods, the river. There was another class, two cabins down, that was taking quilting, and it was like a arts community. I couldn't believe it was in the center of Iowa and so easy to get to. I mean, it just took me an hour to get there. I stayed all night, and Jennifer, the leader, suggests that if we can stay all night, that's really great. It gives us a chance to relax at night. And the leader or teacher of the quilting group showed us a quilt show of the many, many quilts he has made and sold commercially. And then we had a fire out back where we roasted marshmallows, made s'mores, and it was just a wonderful getaway. And I'm going this weekend, and I'm really excited about it. There's another writer's workshop. And I'm just looking forward to getting out with other people and being in nature by the river at Briggs Woods Park. And I'm planning to stay in the cabin Friday night and Saturday night. One thing I was really excited about, quite a few years ago, my husband and I went to John C. Campbell Folk School in North Carolina, and we took art classes. And the drive was just horrendous. It was just such a long drive. And this experience at Briggs Woods Park with Boone Valley Legacy Learning reminded me of John C. Campbell Folk School. And come to find out, Boone Valley Legacy Learning is being patterned after the John C. Campbell Folk School. So we have the same thing right here in the central part of Iowa. Very short drive. I just couldn't believe it, and I was so excited to be able to meet with a few other writers. And Jennifer gave us some neat exercises to make us think in depth about our writing. You do not have to be an accomplished writer. Beginners can take this class too. It's for everyone. But this weekend, Jennifer is bringing, she said, a lasagna for Friday night. So if writers are interested in coming early, Jennifer advises that, Susan, maybe I was thinking it might be cool if I read her email to us. It was really, I was just looking at it. Boone Valley Legacy Learning has been gracious enough to schedule more workshops with the writing community in mind. On the 26th through the 28th of this month, there's an opportunity to join me, Jennifer, at the big cabin for some uninterrupted writing time and, of course, some new writing ideas. I'll be arriving Friday evening around 4:30-ish, and we'll put a lasagna in the oven. That night is optional, but it would be a nice opportunity to get to know each other, so we can spend more time writing on Saturday and Sunday. The scheduled times for the weekend are 9 to 4:30 each day, but I'd like to encourage as many folks who can to stay the night or the nights in the cabin with me. I'm planning a soup potluck on Saturday night, so all you need to do is bring your favorite soup to share, and that is optional. But then Jennifer said, I'll bring a crock pot and some kettles for the stove. The overnight stay is very reasonable. If you bring a friend to share your alcove, you can split it. She wrote, let me know how you are doing. And this was to the people that took the class last time. I had a great time this fall and thought a weekend away in the dead of winter with friends would be rejuvenating. Regards, Jen Burt. If you'd like to stay overnight, be sure to bring your own bedding, warm blankets, your own towel, and your toiletries, of course, whatever you need for staying overnight.
I know that there is quite a bit more going on with Legacy Learning up in Webster City this weekend, some things at Briggs Woods and some things elsewhere. But the best way to find out about that is to go online at Legacy Learning BRV. That's Boone River Valley. LegacyLearningBRV.com. This weekend, the United Church of Christ in Ames will be continuing a tradition of more than 30 years and hosting a theologian in residence with talks and activities extending from the evening of Friday, January 26th, until noon on Sunday. This year's distinguished theologian is Dr. David Sinos, who is an assistant professor of practical theology at the Atlantic School of Theology in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Reporter Kay Puttock recently interviewed Dr. Sinos about the upcoming week.
Welcome, David. You're coming for the Theologian in Residence weekend, this
yes.
weekend. Would you like to start by telling us a little bit about the weekend in general?
Sure. Well, from my understanding, it's been going on for over 30 years, I believe.
Yes, I think that's right. Yes.
Yeah. You probably know a little bit more about it than I do. This will be the first time I've been at one.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they have a history of inviting all sorts of great theologians, one each year, sometime in January or February. And it's really quite an honor to be this year's theologian in residence. Yeah.
Okay, yes. At the end, we'll just remind people of the times and the different events. It starts on Friday evening and goes through Sunday, I believe.
Right.
It ends with a forum on Sunday. But your particular area of expertise is the spiritual development of children, I believe.
Yes. So my area of focus is, broadly speaking, it's practical theology, but within that, My area of particular expertise, is faith and formation and all that encompasses in relation to youth and children. Yeah.
And something that I found quite interesting was that you believe that you can. Well, one of the headings of one of your talks is why our faith needs children.
Right.
And then you believe you can recreate the church by starting with children. And I'm not sure I understand exactly what that means, but I know the church that I go to, one of the main reasons people mention they start coming is because they want their children to have some kind of religious education.
Mm-hmm.
But you believe that children's faith development can somehow teach adults something, I believe, if I've got the right end of the stick?
Yeah, that about sums it up. You say better than I do. So, essentially, without giving away too much of what I'll be talking about,
no, we don't want to do a spoiler
in the coming days. That's right, not a spoiler, but a little bit of a teaser. Yeah. So, really, we're in a period of immense transition as a society and as a church. And often, what happens is within the church, changes happen within the world of worship services and essentially things geared for adults. And then people say, okay, now what do we do with our children and youth, if they ask those questions at all?
Mm-hmm.
And so children and youth is often, what happens with young people is often a response to what's already happened with adults. But that actually isn't the way that when we read the New Testament, the Gospels and Jesus and his interactions with children, he actually paints a very different picture. And a lot of research out there echoes what he said 2,000 years ago, and that's that really the key to everything is young people. It is
mm-hmm.
in the children. So rather than us giving them kind of the a view of a response to what's already happened in the world of adults, what we're actually called to do is start with young people and let them help us rethink what it means to be the church today. Yeah, that essentially is, in a nutshell, kind of what I mean by the idea of why our faith needs children.
Now, you said this is in the New Testament. I was trying to think of what passage that would be. Is it the part where he says, suffer the little children to come unto me? Is that the sort of quotation that...
Yeah, well, there's two, actually. There's two particular ones I have in mind. One of them, just for example, from the book of Mark, one of them there are actually parallels in different Gospels,
sure,
the same stories. But in the ninth chapter of Mark, his disciples are kind of bickering among themselves about who is the greatest, and Jesus welcomes a child into the midst and says that the greatest is the one who welcomes children. And what he's essentially doing, what he says, is that whoever welcomes a child welcomes him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, it kind of echoes that whole, the well-known passage about the sheep and the goats. And when Jesus separates the sheep from the goats, and, you know, to some of them, he says, you know, I was naked and you clothed me, I was hungry and you fed me. And they said, well, when did we do that?
Yeah, in prison and whatnot,
Exactly. And he says, when you did it to other people, you did it to me. This is a parallel in a lot of ways, because he's saying, when you welcome a child, you welcome me. So that is one passage, but actually just, you know, not maybe 20 verses later, once again, the disciples are bickering, and it's like he, you know, I think he just kind of wants to clunk their heads together like the Three Stooges sometimes, because they don't understand, because once again, people are bringing children to Jesus to bless them. And he says, you know, the disciples are trying to keep them away. And he says that you have to actually, he wants them to be brought to him because the kingdom belongs to them. Now, this is a tremendous reversal, and I'll get into this over in my talk over the weekend, but this is a really radical portrayal of what Jesus is doing. And we kind of romanticize it and cutesify it with artwork that we put on Sunday school walls.
Right.
But children were actually very, very low on the totem pole in the Greco-Roman world at the time. They had no status because they were completely dependent, and they were seen as the opposite of the adult male, which was at the time seen as the pinnacle of what we were called to be as human beings. And so to say that actually the kingdom is already theirs, all these things that you know that adult disciples are trying to do, they already have it without even trying, is an incredibly radical position.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we continue to, as I said, like romanticize this as this, oh, great, you know, Jesus loves the children, let's sing a song about it. But actually, it's something much more radical and something much more countercultural than we imagine it to be.
Okay. So I don't know if you can give us any more teasers, just to give us a bit an idea.
Sure.
But that's quite a teaser in itself. This is a countercultural view that you'll be presenting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's one of the things that I'll be talking about. I don't talk just only about children and youth. I also am going to be talking about faith formation more broadly, about what it means to be a person of faith, and as to grow in our faith regardless of our age.
Mm-hmm.
While my work is focused on children and youth, it definitely spills out into other areas as well. But I'm particularly excited also about the Friday evening piece, because I'm using some research that I did a number of years ago to talk about how parents and congregations, how both the church and families can be partners in a mission to nurture faith and nurture the spiritual lives of children. Often there are, you know, talks about what parents can do. More often there are talks about what leaders in the church can do, but really we're in the same, we have the same mission. We're in this together. And so I'm really looking forward to talking about how different approaches to spirituality can actually become an understanding of those different approaches to spirituality can become a means by which all of us as family members and as church leaders can play an important role in nurturing that the spiritual life of children.
Yeah, and this will be, this is on Friday evening, as you mentioned, January the 26th.
This is Friday.
From 6:45 till 8 p.m. And the talk, mm-hmm. I've got the title here, it's United in Mission, How mm-hmm. Spiritual Styles Equip Families and Congregations for Faith Formation. So that begins at 6:45. And I notice there is a meal.
Actually, beforehand, there's a
meal. Yeah, there's
beforehand.
A meal. Beforehand, there's a meal with discussion questions. The meal at 6 o'clock. And then the talk begins at 6:45.
That's
okay.
Right.
We'll tell everyone about this and update them on the different parts of the weekend. Thank you mm-hmm. so much for talking to us. I've been talking to Dr. David Sinos, who's the new theologian in residence at UCC here in Ames. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
You can register for the Theologian in Residence Weekend and find out more details by going to the website of the United Church of Christ at amesucc.org. And here's a reminder about the activities for the weekend, which starts with a meal and discussion on Friday evening at 6 p.m., followed by a talk by Dr. Sinos from 6:45 until 8 p.m. Activities, talks, and discussions will continue on Saturday until Sunday noon. You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Susan Franzend. Thank you for listening. Other voices you heard were Matt Wetrich, Ako Abdul-Samad, Christine Nobles, Carol Barrick, Dr. David Sinos. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Today's show was engineered by Jackie Norman. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Build a Bridge by Mavis Staples from her album, If All I Was Black, and Stand Up for Something by Andrea Day, sung by the Cardinal Sheehan School Choir. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So, if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. Let us know what you think. You can call us at 515-292-2878. Email us at khoiradio@gmail.com or go to the contact page of our website, khoifm.org. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round. You can find the fighter,
the seed in you, so we gon' walk it out and
move mountains. We'll walk it out and move mountains.
possessions anyone can ever have, but it's our worth is treasure. True worth is only measured not by what you got, but what you got in your heart. But you can have everything. But what does it, what does it mean? You, cause I understand.
Ain't here to judge, just to take a stand.
The greater plans, the creator's plan.
Let's all rise like the day began.
Reach out and touch with the Savior's hand.
On rock we stand like his native land.
Let the ways of love be the ways of man.
You got to walk through.